Now it's time to be educated and entertained by the country's most famous environmental scientist, Joey Bia's research grizzly bears, wolves, and birds of prey. He continues to travel all across America to bring you the very best that nature has to offer. Be ready to be amazed. Here's your host, Joey B.
Hello and welcome to Joey B. Outdoors Science and Nature. Man, do I have the coolest job. I travel all across America to bring you the very best that nature has to offer. Well, nature, I don't know if it has to offer much on my aching front lawn. You see, there's organic care, and we're going to talk about it, versus no lawn care. But you see, I've been spending so much time with all my beautiful perennial gardens over the last few years, and they do look awesome, that I've given my front lawn no lawn care. And now I need to bring in, I don't want to call him the lawn doctor, I'll just give it and say he is the ultimate organic man, my great friend Inspector Dave. I'm going to give you a problem today, Inspector Dave. I know that you're going to give me a solution, but first, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks for having me over. I love being the problem solver.
And you do a good job of it. You really do. And your organic solutions are great for all those that listen, and that includes me. And this show is brought to you by Ramsey Outdoor Stores. Whether you shop online or one of their stores, your experience will successfully gear you up for your next adventure. Go to RamseyOutdoor.com. So, Inspector Dave, let's talk about the lawn. And is pH important?
Well, pH is one of the most important things you can do to have a green, healthy lawn. And the reason for that is that all the things that you do to the lawn through organics and through cutting and all, it's all controlled by the pH. So if you don't have your pH in a good range, and it should be around 6.5 area, 7 being neutral, 6.5, that allows the nutrients to be uptaken by the roots of the grass and allows it to really thrive properly. But liming should occur in the fall. That's like the best time to give all winter for the lime to work. But you can still do it in the spring. You should just switch to a faster-acting lime. They call it fast-acting lime. It comes in a granular, or you can get actually liquid lime. You can spray it on too, and that'll give you a chance for the pH to come up through the actions of the lime.
Well, here's a question for you. You're saying that, and we're going to get into talking seeding down the line. Can I still use that liquid one after I've seeded?
I would say yes. Just read the directions to see what they tell you on there about it. I don't think it would be a problem. It's always best to get the lime down as your first step if possible, so you give it time to do its thing, to chemically react with the soil.
All right. So here's my question then, is about seeding. I have so many bare patches on there. So how do I take care of that?
Well, spot seeding works very well. There's a number of ways you can loosen up the soil there and put some grass seed down there. You can put some topsoil over the patches and put some seed into that. And then the main thing is selecting the right type of seed for the location. Do you have a sunny location, partial shade, or full shade? Because that's going to make a huge difference on the variety of seed that you do purchase. So you have to buy it. And you may end up having to buy a couple different varieties depending on your property.
Is there a specific brand that you use or like?
Well, I like the Jonathan Green seeds. They use a lot of organic methods in their raising, and their seed is very, very good germination rate, and it also puts down really deep roots, like their Black Beauty line and all that has very deep roots, so it becomes a very drought-tolerant turf once it all gets growing really well. And I like it, and also because I went to school with the president of the company, too, so I guess I have a penchant toward him, too. He's a good guy. Family business, three generations, and they've really kept it going and grown it up well. And they're doing a lot more organics now with their product lines.
Well, you know what? And many times the reason why we know about specifics of a company is because there's a personal association, and that personal one there is actually a very good one.
Yes, and I really like their seed is available locally in most of the garden centers. If you shop around, the better garden centers will have that. And I guess you can probably buy things directly from them online if you're into that. Okay, so Joe, I know when you like to seed over on your lawn, you use a salt hay. So school me on the salt hay versus other hays.
Well, here's the difference. Salt hay or straw, if you're putting it on, either one works very well. And regular hay would work very well, except that regular hay has the seed is in it. And here's the problem. You're trying to seed your lawn. Let's just say you're using the Jonathan Green, the Black Beauty, and that's what you're looking for in your lawn. And now all of a sudden you have a variety of hay. And I don't think you're going to bale your front lawn for hay. So since you're not going to do that, salt hay or straw becomes the best ones for that. So now I've got a major problem going on my front lawn. And there is Bermuda grass overtaking the lawn. So what's the solution to that, Inspector Dave?
Bermuda grass, depending on who you talk to, some people say just move if you want to get away from Bermuda grass. It can be very invasive. It's a very hardy grass that can get introduced into your soil through clippings and birds, and you inherit it in the neighbor's yard, wherever it comes from. And the problem with Bermuda grass is it turns brown in the winter, so it's not pretty in the wintertime. It goes totally brown and it looks like it's dead. Well, it is dead. And then in the spring, it greens up. The only good thing about it is that it greens up and it's very drought tolerant, so you have a super green, dense lawn once you get it growing again. But it's very hard to control. It's going to have to, you can't dig it out because it's just so many little pieces of the lawn that'll be left in there. It'll just keep sprouting up. It's very, very invasive. So you'd have to go to some type of chemical means really to control it. You know, we try to move away from that when we can. But that's the story there. One more thing about the hay. Why are you putting the hay on the lawn out there? I think we need to just clarify that a little more.
Yeah, it's real simple. We want to retain moisture, and that's an easy way of doing that. And I was going to say that it should prevent some of the birds from picking, but yesterday I looked out the front window and there's two mourning doves and they're having a seed feast right now. So they're just with their feet, they're just moving the hay along and they're getting there. But moisture, because we're looking for a specific temperature and we're looking for a specific amount of moisture. So that's going to help retain the moisture there.
Right. Now you tell me you were growing onions on your front lawn. What's that all about?
Well, actually, it's not the onions that I'm looking to harvest. And here's the problem I've had is, again, moving into this beautiful old home, historic home and all that, and then spending so much time on all the perennial gardens, as I mentioned. Well, the clumps of onion, and some people will just call it onion grass, but the clumps of onions that are growing, there were so many. So over the last couple of years, I was actually, you dig out a whole bunch because there are actually bulbs and bulbettes, the baby ones, and they are just continue to grow. So I dig them out, pop in some topsoil, put in a little seed. And I, last year specifically, that was like one of my tackles, but my lawn is still aching. And I look this year and you know, early spring, what do you see? You see clumps of onions coming up again. And I guess that's the solution, is the digging. Any thoughts?
No, that would be the main thing. It's just trying to take the vigor away from the bulbs by taking as many bulbs out as you can and try to suppress the bulbettes. It's mostly in the spring. It's very pronounced because it grows so fast. So it's like a tuft in the lawn. So your regular lawn is just kind of sitting there a little dormant. And all of a sudden, all these onion things are sprouting up. But as you cut the grass too, that helps to take some of the vigor out of the bulb too by cutting the top off. Like any bulb, if you take away the greenery, it can't replenish itself. But digging, yeah, gives you something to do early in the spring when it's nice to work out there and you just want to get into the dirt a little bit and digging and filling the holes. Labor of love.
Well, I guess I got that labor of love because I sure spent the time digging those up.
Now, you also have a story, and World Cup and lawns. How do these two tie together?
Now, you know, it's funny, and again, I've been to many World Cups, many World Cup finals, and one of the World Cups many years ago in Mexico, when it would be halftime and, you got the announcers and they're analyzing the game and they're just showing you the field. And there were these guys running all over the place. And we just called them Packers because we didn't know what else to call them. And they would be running around. And again, if a soccer player kicked up a divot of grass, they'd go put it back. But they just kept throwing something down and packing and throwing. And they were moving around. So when I finally got to the finals of Mexico, I said, I'm going to find out, again, the term is we call them Packers. I says, I'm going to find out what these Packers are. And all we did was I zeroed in, and they had a bucket of seed with them. Now, think about this. The game is going on. It's halftime, and they're packing it down. But while they're packing, they're throwing seed and packing it down as well. And again, it was just a fun way of watching how the fields were meticulously kept. And then here's another little fun thing. Years ago when I was coaching, and I showed up and the field was horrendous. So I see the head of Parks and Recreation and says, can you dump a couple yards of topsoil right here? And he said, yeah, no problem. He says, what are you going to do? I says, I'm going to fill the holes in. He goes, don't worry. I said, don't worry about it. During practice, if there was some divot on the field, my players were instructed to put a small little cone, the little discs that you can crush and run through, and they put it on there. But I also had cones that were actually solid cones. And at the end of practice, if you put a cone on the field, you actually had to go scoop up some topsoil, take off the disc cone, fill it up, pack it down. And my players became soil packers. And I just would say to them, and guess what? I don't want it to be your ankle, but if you're not going to fill in that hole, that might be your ankle. And they just did it all season long. And by the end of the season, we didn't have total grass, but we did have a level field. So I just thought that was a neat thing. Now, this show is brought to you by Barkerstown Brew, the advanced hydration drink for your dog. 6 natural flavors. Go to BarkerstownBrew.com. Now, when I'm going to talk to Inspector Dave about fertilizing the lawn, and I know that we want to go organics because, hey, if you have children that play on the lawn, if you have pets, and one of the examples I give is when Gabby and I are down visiting my parents and we want to go play on their front lawn, and they're in a 55 and over community. And the problem is you see the little white flags out there, so they've already put chemical on that lawn. So we know that we can't go play there for that poor, and again, most of the times we don't play there just because of that reason. So let's talk about there's the chemical which could harm pets, children, people, you know, adults. So what do I do?
Well, this is the real big controversial part of chemical versus organic lawns. And there's a lot to think about there. The main thing is chemical lawns, I've always been opposed to those because first, they're expensive. They require a lot of water for them to work properly because the chemicals are only in the top couple inches of the soil. So you have to constantly keep the upper part of the soil wet for the chemicals to interact with the turf. And the roots are very shallow on the grass there. So that's the one thing first, that your lawn is not drought resistant. And that's the biggest thing. The amount of water that is used to keep lawns growing is insane. First, you go out west and they put golf courses and all that in the middle of deserts, and then they just use all the water up trying to keep it green. So remember, your lawn around your home is just an area that you want to keep green, but it's not a golf course. Don't try to make it like a golf course. That's the number one thing that I can tell you with organics, because with organics, you're not going to have that pure, bright green, dark lawn that chemicals give, but it's an artificial lawn. You want to have a natural lawn. And when we start using the chemicals, we're not only using chemical fertilizers, who knows what's in those, but we're using insecticides, we're using herbicides. So these all have products in them that can affect our nervous system. So it can affect you. You're sitting out there by your patio. It can affect your garden, your organic garden that you're eating out of next to the lawn. It can affect your dog who's right down there at that level, or cat, or any pet you have. Or it can affect your children that they're out there playing on the lawn, trying to have a good time and are rolling around in chemicals. Just think of the madness of this, what we do to our lawns and to ourselves. It's just not right. So the organic choices are out there. They're available. There's a lot more of them than used to be around. Many other companies now are starting to get into the organics, knowing that it's a safety thing. The state's trying to control the environmental programs, DEP, EPA, all the different environmental groups are trying to downplay the chemical use because it's adding a lot of problems with our water supply, and it's causing algae blooms and all kinds of other things in our reservoirs and in our streams and our lakes and our ponds. So we want to make sure that we keep our chemical usage on our lawns really, really low. And also, don't put it down before it's going to rain 3 inches. It's just going to wash away. That's a lot of people miss that. So, oh, it's going to rain. But not if it's going to rain 3 inches. All your chemicals are going to wash down the street, very expensive runoff you have, and it's going to go into the environment and cause a problem. So I got into corn gluten product probably 35 years ago. It was one company that offered it. I kind of came across it, Gardens Alive, and it's called Wow Supreme. And it's a pre-emergence combination fertilizer, pre-emergence for dandelions and crabgrass and other broadleaf weeds. So you put it down like a granular thing around the time the forsythia bloom. That's the best time with the soil starting to warm up, because you want to make a barrier for weed germination. So you put it down, it gets washed in with the rain a little bit, then it dries and makes a natural barrier to the weed germination, and then it breaks down organically over the next several months and feeds the lawn. So it's like a one step. So I do one treatment in the spring and one treatment in the fall, and I control all my weeds to a very, very tolerable level, and I feed my lawn organically. And it's the way to go. I mean, so many companies now are starting to copy this, but I pride myself, and I was doing it 35 years ago before organics really became a kind of a key word in lawn care.
Now, is there anything else that you put on during the year?
Yes, there's a number of other things you can do. If you start getting some lawn stress in, say, July, when the weather starts to turn maybe a little bad, very hot and a little dry, putting down fish emulsion or kelp with a hose end sprayer works very well, because that helps to just give a little nutrients into the soil to help bring things back. And I also use a liquid soap, and there's a couple different types of soaps you can use that help to break down the surface tension of the soil, which can start to really get, with the sun baking on it and all that, the soil will just not take the water, and the water will run off. So the soil will, the repellency of it will be broken down by a little bit of this very light soap spray that I put on, also with the hose end sprayer.
So it's funny that as you described all that organics, it is so important in your garden because you're actively eating there, and it's so important in the lawn right next to your garden because that is going to be some of the runoff into that organic garden. So I thank you for that bit, because that's super important. Now, there's going to be grubs on the lawn, so why don't you tell me about how I control grubs?
Well, grub control, a lot of natural things kind of occur with grub control. And one of the first, how to identify if you have grubs, there's two ways. One, you can just dig down a foot or two and see if you see any little white, little caterpillar-looking grub things with little red heads. There's a couple different types of grubs out there. Another way is if you have areas of the lawn that roll up like a carpet, that means the grubs are eating the roots, and then they can be in that area too. So I find that some of the newer grass seeds, look for endophytes in there, and that's a built-in natural chemical that's in the grass. So when the grubs eat that, that can helps to poison them and control them. So it's a natural barrier that's built into the seed. Another way is you will get some natural controls from birds, flickers, other ground feeders that like to go in the ground looking for bugs, possums, skunks, they will come around too and help to, control the grubs there. But milky spore was talked about years ago. You used to put little tablespoons of milky spore around. That was another natural chemical that would help control grubs, and it would stay in the lawn for years. There's been some controversy back and forth whether it really does work or not. So it's just another option that is offered out there.
It's funny that when I look out into my front or back parts of the property, when I start to see two flickers out there, I know the grubs are around, but I'm not even concerned because they're having a ball, they're doing my grub control, and they're having a feast too, so it's like Thanksgiving for them there. Now, the next thing is, every now and then you will see some broadleafs, I guess you could say broadleaf control. How do we control it?
Well, those are fairly easy to control. Again, those pre-emergence corn gluten and all that we talked about, those are a help way to do the broadleafs and the dandelions. It'll get all good control with those. But then good old hand-to-hand combat works, just digging them out with a little trowel or a special little fork to get those out of the ground. And they also make a product called IronX, and that is approved for organic use, Iron-X. And that is, again, you mix that up in your sprayer and you spot spray the different weeds, and it helps to control them over the next week or two. And that works really well too, to help suppress weeds. I know you had some other stories too about groundhogs.
Well, it's funny, when I first moved into this home 20 years ago or so, there was a family of groundhogs living literally right next to the foundation of this home. And it was the mom and her babies early spring. And that's when I moved in. And every day, weekly, I would not cut the lawn until they came out, because they were doing my broadleaf plantain control. It happened to be one of their favorite foods, because I would actually, from doing my research out in Idaho, we're watching animals, they're called bite counts. You could actually watch specifically what plants animals are eating. So here I am watching the groundhogs eat the broadleaf plantain. Then I said, all right, they're done. They're full. Now I can go cut the lawn. And you know something? We always classify things as weeds, and now that's a weed. And you're saying like lawns don't have to be, you know, the golf course perfect lawn. When I was out in Idaho doing my plant research on invasive plant species, and some of these were invading like the whole sides of a Rocky Mountain, like yeah, and that to me is an invasive species. Having a few broad leaf plants here and there, not a big deal. And you also explained that it's pretty easy to control them anyway. So now let's go to watering your lawn. So how much, how often? Tell me about it.
Well, again, like I mentioned in the beginning, watering, we want to try and not have to water our garden manually at all if we can help it. You know, why should we be using our expensive city drinking water that we're treating with chlorine and whatever, who knows what else, and putting that onto our lawn, depleting our reservoirs, using up a good drinking, and water supply is always in danger around the world, you know, with climate change, everything that's going on. So to be putting that sprinkler system on every day on your lawn, a good lawn that's organic and has deep roots only needs 1 to 2 inches of water a week maximum, you know, to keep it going. And one of the ways to tell if your lawn's getting dry, if you walk on it and the grass, like you can see your footprints behind you, then you know the water's, the lawn's starting to get a little dry and stuff. And then just look at the weather forecast and hope for rain. But I do encourage people to fight that impulse to put the sprinkler on there, like, every day, or run out and try to, because your neighbor's watering the lawn, you have to also. Just look at the lawn, see how it's doing. Even a lawn that goes a little dormant will come back, you know, once the rains start up again, if we get a real drought spell or something. But one of the things, if you get a real drought and a real dry spell, you cannot water your lawn enough to make up for the lack of natural rain. And it's just, you're throwing money away, wasting good water, and just really disturbing the environment just for the sake of having a green lawn around your home.
And as you talk about waste, there are times where, you know, I'll be driving down some town and you see sprinkler systems going on and it's raining out. And they do make rain gauges that you can actually attach to your gutter that attaches to your sprinkler system. So if it's raining out, the sprinklers don't go on. But I'm amazed as to how much water waste does go on. So now, let me ask you another question, and that's in regard to, well, cutting the lawn. So there are mulching mowers or bag mowers. Tell me about the different types of mowers, lawn mowers, and the actual cutting of the lawn.
Okay, so the lawn mowers that you find out there, there's like three different versions. There's a mulching mower, which is a mower that has like a double blade underneath, and you just walk over the lawn with it. It's usually a power mower of some type, either gas or electric. Hopefully you're switching to electric. And it'll chop up the grass into smaller pieces. It'll fall back into the soil, decompose quickly, and re-energize the soil by adding nitrogen back into the soil. The second type is a bagging mower, where you would have a bag on the side or the back, and you would catch the clippings from the lawn and then put them into your compost pile or use them somewhere in a recycling area, or if the town recycles. And then you have just the lawnmower that just shoots everything out the side, like a windrow type mower, where you're just blowing maybe all the grass cuttings into a wooded area or somewhere else, you know, off the lawn. So that works really good. The big thing with the mulching mower, you can't wait till the lawn is 6 inches tall to use it. You have to keep up a little bit more with it so that the machine doesn't get overwhelmed and you can give the grass time to break down with nature and the heat and the water and everything else that it takes to compost that grass right in place. So lawnmowers, but I'm switching over. I just switched over last year to a battery-powered mower. I'm trying to move away from fossil fuels and trying to have a quieter, less stinky event when I'm cutting my lawn. And boy, it's been a home run and a half, you know, switching over to the battery mowers.
Now, let me ask you another question then. So we're talking about lawnmowers. We need to address lawnmower safety. Give me a few tips, please.
Well, big thing, read that manual. You should have, you know, a booklet or a manual. It's like any piece of power equipment. You use it a couple times a year or maybe a couple months out of the year. You forget. You should read your manual every year and see what they tell you in there. Obviously, you should not be out in sandals or barefoot cutting your lawn with a power mower. You should be wearing ear protection if you have a fossil fuel mower for decibels, so that. Safety glasses are always a good idea, making sure there's no people around when you're cutting. So if it kicks up a rock or a stick, you don't injure someone. You should have walked the lawn before you cut to look for any things that may have fallen during a storm, or, you know, rocks that popped up from somewhere, or a branch or whatever that can damage the mower. So it's very important to do all that and watch where you're, if you're aiming the shoot somewhere from the lawnmower, make sure you're not aiming it toward a glass window or something like that, obviously. You know, some of the stuff's like, oh, that's a no-brainer. People like threw rocks through their window, basement window all the time with lawnmowers because the machine will pick it up and throw it around. If you just had the house aluminum sided maybe, or you had some work done, make sure there's no pieces of aluminum or nails or pieces of metal, be like shrapnel, you know, getting shot out of that mower. So you don't want to do that. I remember as a kid, some guy asked me to cut his lawn. And you know, as a kid, you're not paying that much of an attention to it. And I'm going across his lawn and there was a little piece of aluminum. I didn't realize that he had had the house sided. And I was like shooting like pieces of aluminum, like out into the street. I didn't hit anybody. But that was a really early lesson that I learned at age 14.
Well, you know something, Inspector Dave?
Yeah.
My outside of my home, the perennials, they look awesome. I guess it's now time to take action on my front lawn. And I know that it's off the beaten path here, but you have a book that just came out. So tell me about your book.
Okay, my book is entitled Fire in Our Lives. And it's based on my 40 years in public safety, with an emphasis on fire safety, fire education, and severe weather. So it's just a group of stories, 10 chapters. It's an easy, comfortable read, conversational style. And it's all about what we can learn by helping people, meeting people, fires that occurred, storms that occurred. How can we make our lives safer through just like easy steps that we can take? So it's an easy read. It's available on Amazon and at Barnes & Noble. There's digital versions are out now. So it's an easy read. It's an inexpensive read. So I want to make sure that the price point was set so everybody, you know, could afford the book and be able to really pass it around to their family and their friends and learn from this book. But it's entertaining. In addition, it'll be educational.
Well, I've said this and I mean it. It's like, this is a book that everyone who owns a house, an apartment, you own a condo, you need to make sure that this is a book that's a must read for you because it's all about safety. So Inspector D, first thing is, got to thank you for showing up today because it's beautiful outside, but we're inside. So I thank you very much for showing up to the studio.
Okay, thanks very much. And make sure that lawnmower blade is sharp before you use that new machine.
And you know something? You will be back in the studio, I'm sure, many times to teach us about so many of the organic things that go on in life. Or maybe we're talking about birding or fishing because that's some of our passions as you live down the road from me a spell. And we'll chat a little bit about something. But I probably will have you next year back in for Oh My Aching Back Lawn. So until next time, enjoy life's adventures. You can follow all of my adventures online at joeybee.tv. That's joeybee.tv. And a very special thank you to the men and women of our armed forces for keeping us free and for our police and firefighters for keeping us safe. May God bless America. Until next time, this is Joey B. Enjoy life's adventures.